We've been talking about vial number one and vial number two and vial number three. And in vial number one, and the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast and upon them which worshipped his image. Then in vial number two, and the second angel poured out his vial upon the sea, and it became as the blood of a dead man, and every living soul died in the sea. In vial number three, Revelation 16:4, and the third angel poured out his vial upon the fountains and rivers of waters. They became blood. Vial number four, and the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire. Now, I'm going to deal with vial one in Revelation 16:2, at least I'm going to start this morning. And the first went and poured out his vial upon the earth, and there fell a noisome and grievous sore upon the men which had the mark of the beast, and upon them which worshipped his image. This is directly tied in with vial number four. And the fourth angel poured out his vial upon the sun, and power was given unto him to scorch men with fire, and men were scorched with great heat, and blasphemed the name of God, which had power over these plagues, and they repented not to give him glory. So, I'm going to beat around the bush for a while, but eventually I'll get to it, and I may not be able to complete it until next Sunday morning. Luke 21:10. I've done this lecture series now for 20 years, and in Luke 21:10 and 11, then said he unto them, nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and great earthquakes shall be in divers places, and famines and pestilences, and fearful sights and great signs shall there be from heaven. I've talked about what these fearful sights and great signs are. I've covered Acts 2:19 through 20 completely. And now I'm going to talk about some things that God is doing that eventually will lead to the complete fulfillment of vial 1 and vial 4. What you see here is the South Pole, Antarctica. The difference between the South Pole and the North Pole is that the South Pole has a landmass under it, a continent, Antarctica. The North Pole doesn't have anything but water under it. There's no land mass underneath it. Now, up here you see Africa, and over here you see South America, and over here you see Australia. Now, in the middle, you see Antarctica. And around it, you see this maze of clouds or something. And down here in the center, you have something that looks like a hole where you can see through to Antarctica. What that is the ozone hole. It's a break in the ozone layer. They told us for years that it would develop at both poles at the same time, but it's never developed at the North Pole, and there's a definite reason. They tell you that chlorofluorocarbons are causing it. I'm a certified teacher to teach chemistry and physics. I'm a God-called preacher, but I'm an honest man. To tell you the truth, chlorofluorocarbons don't have anything to do with the depletion of the ozone layer, and I'm going to show you why, and I'm going to prove it to you. And I'll start this morning, and I guarantee you by Sunday I will have proved it. I told people years ago, back in 1978, that this hole was caused not by chlorofluorocarbons, but by forceful ejections of volcanic materials, pyroclastic materials, that blew up through the tropopause layer and actually penetrated the stratosphere where the ozone layer exists. In one single volcanic eruption around the periphery of the Pacific Ridge, it releases an unbelievable amount of little tiny fluorochlorocarbons, primarily chlorine itself, that clips off one of the three oxygen molecules and presents a case where you have it converted back to oxygen, and that stops the ability of the ozone to block out ultraviolet radiation, which causes skin cancer or leads to it, and also noisome grievous boils and sores. Now, I knew this was the case in 1983. They had long since stopped the chlorofluorocarbons. They were doing all sorts of things, and they said, don't worry, now that we've stopped the chlorofluorocarbons, you will see that the ozone hole will close back up again. Well, in 1983, this was the size of it. In 1985, this was the size of it. And in 1991, this was the size of it, and it's even larger today. Why didn't the elimination of chlorofluorocarbons, why didn't that stop the growth? Well, at first they said, it'll stop it right away. But then when it didn't, they said, well, these are residual effects. Well, it's still growing. The reason is a very simplistic one. It's not the spray cans that are causing it. It's not the release of fluorochlorocarbons from different types of refrigeration and air conditioning units that are causing it. What's causing it is something that involves volcanic eruptions, and it is something that involves the greatest ripoff of the American society that has ever been perpetrated, and it continues to be perpetrated, and I doubt if it will ever be penetrated. I got my proof of this in living color whenever the actual Pinatubo eruption occurred. In the fourth week, the pent eruption which occurred here, what you see in this white, is the actual material that penetrated the stratosphere above the tropopause level and was depleting the ozone layer, spreading from this way to this way. in this area above the tropopause level in this particular zone, the winds don't go from west to east, they go from east to west. And so you can see the cloud spreading across. By week 6, it was here. And by week 12, it had circled the globe. This thing literally chewed up the ozone layer. It flat chewed it up. And so scientists now that have gotten tremendous grants from the government over the years because they wanted to prove this are now having to back up, and they're simply not talking about it. In the first book I ever wrote, I put this diagram in there and told people exactly what was breaking down the tropopause layer. Now, if it sounds like to you that I'm braggadocio and I'm just saying, well, it's got to be this way, well, in this case, I am. This is the way it is. It can't be any other way, and before next Sunday, I'll prove it, by next Sunday. This is the way our atmosphere is composed. I'm a professional certified meteorologist, and I did this most of my life. When God made the atmosphere, he put a tropopause layer. Around the entire periphery of the Earth, you have, at some height above the ground, varying from very high at the mid-latitude, at the equator, all the way down to a low altitude at the North Pole, you have a tropopause level. What happens is the temperature decreases till you get up to it, then it starts to increase. That's very important because you know that warm air rises through cold air. So down here, this cold air tries to rise through air that is getting warmer than it is, and it can't rise. The only way that the ozone layer could ever possibly have been contaminated is by actual forceful injection from volcanic eruptions. The ozone layer exists above the tropopause in the stratosphere level and on into the mesosphere. The mixing of hydrogen chlorine gas from this volcanic smoke with the ozone gas in the stratosphere causes a breakdown of the ozone layer. This isn't a theory. It's a fact. Because I didn't want to get rich, and because I'm an honest scientist, I didn't go along with this bunch of people that went out and got a bunch of grants involving billions of dollars eventually from the government for the elimination of chlorofluorocarbons. And that's why the scientists did it. Some of them are honest, some of them are dishonest, but most of them are dishonest, and they know it's not the truth. I began to keep up with volcanic eruptions a long time ago. I noticed that from 1850 to 1900, there was one major volcanic disaster. From 1900 to 1950, there were 5 major volcanic disasters. From 1950 to 1982, in that 32-year period, there were 14 major volcanic disasters. We're rapidly approaching the year 2000. So in 1982, from that period of just 32 years, we had already had 14. We now have had 21 volcanic disasters that has occurred during that particular period of time. That's why the ozone layer is broken down, the chlorine connection. Everywhere, every time there's a volcanic eruption, here's what goes up. Nitrogen, chlorine, sulfur, and carbon. It goes up into the actual tropopause layer. The actual molecule that makes up ozone is very similar to oxygen. Why? Right now, in this room, every time you take a breath, you're breathing a molecule of oxygen, 2 oxygen atoms that are bonded together. It's called O2. Every time you breathe, you're taking in a bunch of those molecules. Now, that's air. But if you add another molecule on it, you have 3 atoms of oxygen. That's ozone. Now, this third connection is a very weak connection. The first 2 are very strong. It's a bond that's very hard to break. The second one is added on by God in the actual stratosphere, and it makes ozone. Ozone protects from ultraviolet radiation completely. Oxygen doesn't protect anybody from anything. Well, since the attraction for that third molecule is very weak, anytime you send any type of chlorofluorocarbon gas up there, such as chlorine, the power and strength that God put in each little particular atom to have an attraction for another atom, this one is much greater than the strength that bonds that third oxygen molecule on the unit, ozone, and it clips it off, breaks it back down to 2 units of oxygen, which does not shield from ultraviolet radiation. Now, to be honest with you, this is when I first discovered this a long time ago. It was before the eruption of Mount St. Helens. There was a scientist named David Johnson. He was killed in the eruption. He was examining the actual material that is ejected by volcanic eruptions, and in that ejection, he discovered a tremendous amount of actual ozone-depleting chlorines that, once they were forced into the stratosphere, would break down the ozone layer. It was no question about it. Chemically, from a chemist's standpoint, it's a very simple thing. Well, as the number of volcanic eruptions have increased, so has the actual ozone hole, volcanoes of the world. These are the average number of volcanic eruptions per year. From 1798 to 1848, we had 22 per year, average. 1848 to 1898, that 50-year period, average of 33 eruptions per year. 1898 to 1948, 43 per year. 1948 to 1994, 57 per year. And 1967 up to 1994, 60 plus per year. We have now gone up to 62 plus per year. Now, why Freon is not depleting the ozone layer? Do chlorofluorocarbon gases rise up to the ozone layer? No, they can't. They can't. Now, this is such a fantastic ripoff, and this proof is so conclusive that you probably think I'm crazy. But it's a conclusive proof. I mean, it isn't something, and scientists know this, but money, the love of money, is the root of all evil, and scientists can't get grants for stopping volcanic eruptions because that's impossible. Do chlorofluorocarbon gases rise up to the ozone layer? This is the molecular weight of a standard atmosphere, 29.966. The molecular weight of helium is 4.003. You can see 4.003, this molecular weight, is much lighter than the air sample at sea level of 28.966. So naturally, helium would rise in a balloon. You take hydrogen, the molecular weight of hydrogen, 2.016. You can see that's much greater than the normal weight of air at sea level, 28.966. So you put hydrogen in a balloon, it rises. Now let's take the molecular weight of Freon-12. That's the most popular one that they put in fluorochlorocarbons. Here's the molecular weight, 120.910. If the air sample has a molecular weight at sea level of 28.966, and you've got Freon-12 at 120.910, there is no way under heaven that's going to rise of its own volition. It's actually thermostatically impossible. Are chlorofluorocarbon gases water-soluble? Does the water vapor and precipitation in the atmosphere wash them out? Freon-11 through Freon-115 are all water-soluble except Freon-21. How do the weights of chlorofluorocarbon gases compare with the molecular weight of a standard atmospheric sample of gas? All chlorofluorocarbon gases are heavier than the gas which makes up our atmosphere. Anytime you have a volcanic eruption, it forcibly blows these heavier gases up into a level where they should not be. In other words, it's the actual volcanic force, the impetus of the mechanical force of a volcano that blasts these gases up through the actual tropopause layer, and without this boost from the volcano, they cannot rise of their own volition. Now, these are the molecular weights of gases at sea level. Weight of a standard air sample is 28.966. Right across here is 28.966. Everything you see in orange below this line. Notice that hydrogen is lighter, so it rises in a balloon. Helium is lighter, so it rises in a balloon. This is your standard atmosphere, 28.966. Now take a look at all these Freons. There are 16 types. You can see them on this chart. You can see every single one of them is much, much heavier in molecular weight than a sample of air. Therefore, they will not rise of their own volition. So when you take that hairspray can, it's got chlorofluorocarbons or any type of thing thereof that breaks down ozone, and you spray it on your hair. They're telling us, oh, it rises. That's a lie. That's an absolute lie. It does not. It cannot. But there's more reason than that. First of all, if you just take a can of fluoride, take a can of Freon, spray it out yourself. Watch the spray sink down to the ground. It will not rise. And people say, well, if it gets in the ground, it'll kill everything. Nah, it's pretty good for the ground. Probably helped it. Now, the second reason that it won't go is because of this actual lapse rate. It can't rise, even if it were lighter than air. There's a protective place in the atmosphere where the temperature starts to increase. If you heat air in the lower levels, it's warmer, it's lighter, so it rises up. That's natural. But if the air is cold, it settles. It doesn't rise if the air is warmer above it. So you can see this temperature inversion, which is an increasing lapse rate in the atmosphere, would block Freon, even if the Freon was lighter than the air samples. It couldn't break this layer where the ozone is. So what happens? It has to be forcibly blown through it by a volcanic eruption. Now, reason number three that I know that fluorochlorocarbons produced by man are not destroying the ozone layer. Physical transport of atmospheric gases. Don, you remember this chart and diagram? That's one of the first things we had when we were started in Met Tech. Atmospheric gases migrate from the equator to the poles in both the northern 40 years ago. But they've proven it's true. I mean, that is something that they've proven. This is what happens. Atmospheric gases migrate from the equator to the poles in both the northern and southern hemisphere. Okay. If all the gases here migrate down to the south pole this way from the equator and this way to the north pole, and you take that fact, and here's another fact. This is not a theory. It's an absolute fact. 74% of all chlorofluorocarbons are released in the industrialized northern hemisphere. You take your air conditioning units. Do you think they have a lot in the southern hemisphere? They're basically poor people. No, they don't. What about the industrial complexes? Where are they located? There are three of them. Japan, northern hemisphere. Europe, northern hemisphere. United States, northern hemisphere. So you've got your industrial complexes. You've got all your people that have air conditioners in the northern parts. You've got all your cars, basically, up here, most of them. 74% of all chlorofluorocarbons are released in the industrialized northern hemisphere. Now, if that's what's breaking down the ozone layer, here's my question. How come the hole didn't appear first at the North Pole? Very simple reason. Because it's not the chlorofluorocarbons that are causing it. It appeared first at the South Pole. Why would it appear at the South Pole? Because most of your volcanoes are located in the southern hemisphere, and because down on Antarctica itself is Mount Erebus, which is a volcano that has been belching chlorofluorocarbons up into that hole for some time. So Lord willing, we'll talk about that next Sunday. Now the reason I'm doing this, those noisome, grievous boils and sores, they're caused by ultraviolet radiation. Secondly, scorching with great heat, there's no more effective heat to scorch man known than ultraviolet radiation from the sun. This hole is growing. It's going to continue to grow. We're having more volcanic eruptions. So you're going to see an ever-increasing hole. Man is not producing this. It's being produced by an act of God with a volcanic eruption. So Lord willing, we'll take up here next Sunday.